Welcome back in, hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to have Trey Wallace from Rocky Top Insider join us later this hour at 8:30. So looking forward to that conversation with him. We'll get into the Vols a few weeks away now from college football beginning, and also get Trey's thoughts on Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC as well and what that means for Tennessee. All that coming up at 8:30. But right now, talking Nashville Predators, NHL free agency one day away, beginning tomorrow. And look, we've already seen a ton of moves in the NHL via trade, and now tomorrow free agents get added to the mix as well. And a couple of interesting names that are out there, including some names that were on the Predators last year in Mikael Granlund and Eric Halla as well. So lots still to be determined on that front. And David Poile joined Darren Donick and Chase yesterday to discuss a lot of things, the NHL draft being among them, and where the Predators now sit as they head into the free agency period beginning tomorrow. And David Poile talked about maybe the moves that have been made so far and what that does for them now in terms of the cap space that they have and the flexibility that is now on the table. Here's what Nashville Predators general manager David Poile had to say yesterday on Darren Donick and Chase.
Obviously, the first and most important thing was, as I said, and you just mentioned it, that I really felt that we're kind of peaked out with our team, kind of leveling off, and I felt that if we stayed the same, that we actually make it worse, not better. So it's my judgment. It was time to make some changes. I think the fact that we've saved, you know, some money in the two deals that we've made gives us some flexibility to improve our club for this year, but also for down the road, because the cap is essentially going to be flat, it appears, for the next couple of years. So you've really got to be careful about that. I mean, you've seen a number of trades that have been made this year where teams are very low in money, took on salaries to get draft picks. You know, we're not in that area of competitiveness, nor do we necessarily want to do that. But, you know, those deals are hard to come by. And, you know, like, say, in Arizona, that took on some players to get draft picks. I mean, they can't do that anymore, essentially, because their cap is now getting up there, and if you have a bad contract, it's going to be hard to move that player.
So that was David Poile on yesterday with Darren Donick and Chase discussing the cap flexibility that the Predators now have and what that could mean for them both this year and in the future as well, with a flat cap coming up. We've talked about free agency beginning. I've made it pretty clear. I don't think the Predators should be all that active in free agency. I don't know that the proper approach is getting rid of all this money, freeing up some contract that are not aging well at this point, and then throwing more money at free agents. Now, I'm not saying they should be totally just sitting on their hands in free agency either. If you make a move for a one-year deal, sure, bring in somebody on a one-year deal. You want to re-sign Mikael Granlund? I think that's going to be something absolutely that the Predators try to do. Maybe Eric Hall is a part of that mix as well. So I'm not just saying sit there and do nothing. But in terms of getting yourself involved in these big-name guys like a Landeskog for a long-term deal, I would be very surprised at this point, Joe Rexroad, if that's a route the Predators consider taking.
Yeah. And there's no – not that Poile previews every big move he makes, but as he talks about this stuff, there's no reason to think otherwise. And if anything, there's more reason to go with that instinct. I just think that we're going to see young guys get an opportunity, and I think that the Granlund signing or non-signing is possibly the difference between a team that really has a chance at the playoffs and a team that doesn't. Not that they couldn't if a bunch of things break their way, but I think the cap space and the possibilities a year from now are probably potentially more intriguing. And then you kind of know what you need to do. Are you actually not that far, or is it actually more of a rebuild than you thought? Now, if it gets to that, it's going to be a painful, you know, slog all the way through a season of that. But I think that makes the most sense right now.
There was an interesting report out there yesterday, which kind of got Preds Twitter buzzing a little bit yesterday. This coming from Nick Alberga up in Toronto, who does a little radio work up in Toronto, also does some work for Sportsnet as well, putting it out there says, quote, two teams to watch closely on the Ryan Getzlaff front, the Predators and the Boston Bruins.
Oh, yes.
Ryan Getzlaff, who, of course, has spent his entire career to this point with the Anaheim Ducks. He's 36 years old. He's been a very good player, a Stanley Cup champion early in his career with the Ducks, and has been the captain of the Ducks for basically the past decade plus there in Anaheim. He's not the same guy that he used to be. He had 17 points last year in 48 games. So his production has gone way down. But, you know, at the height of his career, he's a guy putting up 91 points, 76 points, 87 points, 73 points. He's typically around a 75-point guy at the height of his career. That, to me, doesn't make any sense for the Predators to be in on Ryan Getzlaff. And I know there were kind of some varying opinions on that yesterday. Adam Vingan pretty vehemently against it. Lots of Predators fans saying, well, if you can bring in Getzlaff for a one-year deal, maybe he could be your second-line center at that point. It's, to me, bringing in Ryan Getzlaff would pretty much go counterintuitive to everything they've done up until this point.
I mean, Getzlaff and Neil on a line together?
Yeah, man.
Come on. Yeah. Bring it on. With Delaney Walker, a tight end for the Titans.
Yes.
It sounds amazing. This city is on the rise.
Now, I do love me some Ryan Getzlaff. Us bald guys got to stick together, and Getzlaff's very good to talk to. So I would like it coming in here personally. But I just don't think it's a very good fit for the hockey team.
Is there too much hatred for Getzlaff from Preds fans because he played for the Ducks and is named Ryan, and he liked Ryan Kesler?
Yes.
He's friends with Ryan Kesler and Corey Perry?
Yes.
Because he's not nearly the jerk those guys are.
No. Getzlaff, I mean,
yeah, he's fine.
He had an edge to him, but
sure.
I wouldn't put him in the same breath as like Corey Perry and Ryan Kesler, no.
No, but it's just guilt by association.
Yeah.
Johnny on Twitter says, the only good thing that would come from the Preds signing Getzlaff is it would piss off Ducks fans. # I don't want him. No, it makes no sense at all to do something like that. If you're going to sign a veteran, like sign a veteran who's producing.
Yeah.
But if you're going to take a job from one of these young players that you're trying to evaluate, why would you do it with someone who's clearly on the decline and not far from retirement?
Well, if Getzlaff is coming in, and I wonder, the report was two teams to watch. Well, what does that mean? You know, it's not like the report didn't say that the Predators were, hey, they're in on Getzlaff and they're closing in on a deal or something like
right.
that. Like two teams to watch.
I
don't know what
so
that means, but like just thinking about it logically. If you're the Predators, and maybe you don't get Granlund signed, but would you not be better off if Granlund's not coming back to just roll with Cody Glass as your second-line center and just see what you have there rather than bringing in somebody like Ryan Getzlaff? Like, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
100%.
Unless you want Getzlaff to be like your fourth-line center. Move Sissons up.
That is the most important line on the team.
Maybe so. Getzlaff can be a part of the Hurd line.
That's a bit, that Hurd line is
huge.
It's an offensive line now.
Yeah.
Olivier and Getzlaff. Who's the center? Yeah, Sisson's
Getzlaff.
The center. Who's the left tackle? Getzlaff?
The left tackle. No, good question. I saw that report and that got Preds Twitter all in a frenzy yesterday. I would be surprised if Ryan Getzlaff ends up here. And that's the other part, like if you're him, obviously, you're basically in rebuild mode in Anaheim, and he spent his entire career there. And he's talked about wanting to finish his career there before, but now he's a free agent. They've not been able to come to a deal at this point. And at 36 years old, my guess would be you start to take maybe the Joe Thornton route of go find a contender be a small piece on a contender would be my guess.
I really want to find a competitive rebuild to be a part of.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense for anyone.
Now, Boston makes a little bit of sense for Ryan Getzlaff. Third, fourth liner on Boston, that makes a lot of sense. I don't really anticipate the Predators being a part of that mix. Could be wrong.
They're a team to watch, though, Robbie.
They're a team to watch. Hey. Maybe go get Corey Perry.
Ohio State, Clemson, Florida State, and Michigan are teams to watch for the SEC.
What if you got Getzlaff and Corey Perry at the same time for the Predators?
I mean, that would be pretty special.
It would be.
What is Corey Perry's status, by the way?
I don't know if he's a free agent or not.
Did they sign him a multi-year deal?
I mean, he was on a one-year deal with the Stars. I can't imagine that he signed more than a one-year deal with Montreal, too. But let me see. He might be a free agent, too.
So which team is he going to almost win a cup with next year?
I don't know. Get back. Well, hey, maybe that's the secret if you're the Predators. Just get Corey Perry in here and you're at least going to the final at that point.
That's right. That's right. Maybe. Yeah, I just feel like it's going to be a very uneventful next, little period of time, except on the Granlund front. I mean, the Granlund front is, to me, really important. And again, it traces back to the trading deadline.
Robert in Nashville texting in on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Getzlaff, maybe the locker room situation is that bad, and they bring him in to help that out.
Okay. So he's going to come in not having played with these guys. He's an older guy. He's been a leader there, no question. He's going to come in and say, hey, Yeoman, hold on, man. I got this. I mean, he's an older guy who, like you said, Thornton's a great comparison. Trying to find a cup, but.
And it's a little different because Getzlaff does have one. So he's at least won a cup before.
Right, but if you're going to keep playing now, why? Yeah. Why are you doing
it? Exactly.
Right? Because you're signing a low-cost deal. You're sticking around to try to take another run at it.
Jacob in Murfreesboro texting in, Getzlaff potentially to Nashville gives me Randy Moss to the Titans vibes.
Getzlaff was not Randy Moss. He's quite Randy Moss in his prime, but yeah, it's a decent comparison.
Yeah. Donovan from Wisconsin texting in, I believe that Nashville should either target Ullmark or Brian Elliott as backup. Both can be starters when needed, but both fit better in a backup role, in my opinion. I think the Predators should stay as far as humanly possible away from Brian Elliott. I mean, to me, that serves no purpose. He's 37 years old. Last few years, he's not been able to stop a puck. That is your job as a goaltender. I'd stay away from that one.
Who's your number one right now?
The more I think about it, the more I really like Antti Raanta. I think that is an option for the Predators that is very intriguing. A lot of this is what's going to happen in Carolina. They traded Nedeljkovic. They got
Which
back Bernier. I don't like it either.
I don't like that for them.
But it signals to me that another move is coming there. Like, they got back Bernier, who, by the way, is a free agent, and they've not been able to sign him yet. So you've got Bernier as a free agent that you have the rights to, Peter Mrazek as a free agent that you have the rights to, and James Reimer that you have the rights to as well. I would say at least two of those three are going to hit the market, and they're going to be available. Maybe all three. It could be Carolina swinging at the fences and trying to bring in another goalie, or, as Ryan Porth pointed out yesterday on Preds Insiders, maybe Carolina having some financial issues right now. They're not giving much money to not even making an offer at this point to Dougie Hamilton. Could be a little concerning to be a Carolina Hurricanes fan at the moment.
Man, that would stink if that's what this is, you know?
Yeah.
They're not that far.
They're not. Very good team last year. We'll see what happens on the goaltending front. But all things being equal right now, I think Raanta might be the way to go. I think you need a veteran backup. Somewhere 28 to 32 years old. Need a veteran backup.
Preferably Finnish.
And I don't think it's going to be Connor Ingram. I know some people floated that out there. I don't know how you could feel comfortable about Connor Ingram right now being the backup goalie. Maybe they do. Maybe they feel differently. But to me, that would be very concerning.
And it's not going to be Carter Hutton.
Probably not going to be Carter Hutton, would be my guess. So we'll see what happens on that front. That's certainly one decision that David Poile and the Predators will have to make. They did make one move yesterday. They got a lot of Preds Twitter in a frenzy. We'll get to that coming up next, as well as your thoughts on our text line as well, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Nashville Predators, we'll have Trey Wallace from Rocky Top Insider coming up at 8:30. So looking forward to that conversation coming up with him. Yesterday, some moves made by the Nashville Predators. It was the final day to submit the qualifying offers for restricted free agents. Jeremy Davies and Ben Harper were re-signed yesterday by the Nashville Predators. Davies, a one-year, two-way contract. Ben Harper, a one-year contract worth $800,000. And Ben Harper got a significant amount of playing time last year for the Nashville Predators. A lot of people thought maybe that was the last time we would see Ben Harper in the Nashville Predators uniform. There are times he looked okay. Times it did not go very well for Ben Harper last year in a Predators uniform. But I got to say, Joe, not a very popular reaction on Twitter yesterday to the re-signing of Ben Harper by David Poile on the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, there was a lot of outrage for an $800,000 contract.
There was. A whole lot.
I mean, I guess I sort of counted him out because of some of the, you know, other things they've done. But
it's also like if you have to move on from Ben Harper, you just put him on waivers and you're done with it. Like, it's not that big a deal. It's a one-year contract.
Right.
At $800,000.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a depth.
It's right. A depth and keep. Look, a lot of people, and I think the genesis of a lot of the passion yesterday was, well, that takes a spot away from Jeremy Davies. I got news for y'all. Jeremy Davies is not ready playing the NHL. Based on what I saw last year, Jeremy Davies is not ready. He's really not all that close to being ready to play in the NHL. So I think some more time at the AHL level will probably do Jeremy Davies pretty good. Then the question is, all right, is it going to be David Ferentz, Mark Borowiecki? Is he going to be a part of this again as well? Because, you know, with the injuries and everything he was going through at the end of last year, he just didn't play. But he still has another year left on his deal. I think the Predators like a lot of what Borowiecki brings to the table. I mean, the bottom line is they've got a lot of options on the back end of their decor. I mean, you think about what their defense looks like right now, even without Ryan Ellis. You've got Josi, Carrier, Ekholm, Myers, Favreau. Now Ben Harper back in the mix. Borowiecki's back in the mix. Matt Benning is still in the mix. I mean, there's a lot of options they've got on defense. So I don't know that Ben Harper is even really going to be a part of things. I guess I didn't read that much into this contract yesterday, but apparently a lot of people did.
I mean, competition's good, right?
Yeah. He's a big guy. Left-handed shot. They need a little bit more from left-handers out there. There's a lot of right-handers in the mix now. Gives you an option there, but I don't know that this necessarily means that, you know, Ben Harper is going to be the mainstay back there on the third D pair.
Right. Hines clearly likes him.
Sure.
There are other reasons to be outraged.
Not bringing back Eric Gudbranson, though.
Yeah, well, that's where you're outraged,
yeah,
right?
For sure. That was a good idea at the time. Worked out well. Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Our buddy George texting in, big free agency question for Pred seems to be whether Connor Ingram is ready to play 25 or 30 games for Nashville. Your thoughts? I think it's just so hard to judge that. I think Connor Ingram's got a lot of ability. He had a great year in Milwaukee a couple years ago when that team was rolling. Last year, he basically didn't play. I mean, he had some off-ice issues that thankfully seemed to have been worked out, and David Poile talked about that a couple weeks ago after Pekka-Rinne's retirement, that seems like everything is good now with Connor Ingram, and he's going to be able to get back on the ice and focus on hockey this year. So that's good that he's gotten everything figured out, apparently. But he basically didn't play last year. Like, I don't know how, if you're the Predators, you could feel comfortable with him being your backup goaltender when he's not really played in a year.
How important is it to make the playoffs next year?
I think that depends on who you ask. I think if you ask them, it's still very important. Like, I don't get the vibe here. I'll just use that word again. I don't get the vibe here from the Predators that they feel like that they're about to go into this downturn. Like, I think they feel like they should be right there competing for the playoffs again.
Okay. Well, then you have to invest beyond that and get a veteran who you feel good about starting 30-ish or 35 games. And Connor Ingram may have been on that track before all the stuff happened with him, but I think it's too early.
I think it's too – and look, maybe it gets to the point where halfway through next year, he's ready. And then you can adjust from there. But
you've already signed someone probably.
Right, and it depends on – I mean, it depends on a lot of things. Like, is the guy you signed, is he playing well? Is he not playing well? Can Saro stay healthy? I mean, there's a lot of different factors that go into it.
Yeah, it's good to have Ingram.
It's good to have Ingram
in there, yeah, for sure. And hopefully he's figured it out and he's healthy and keeps progressing, because obviously a couple years ago there was a lot of excitement about the way he was playing.
I mean, somebody just texted in at this point, is Ingram ready to play 30 minor league games? And that's, I would hope so at this point. But yeah, that's more along the lines of where I'm thinking with Connor Ingram. Like, I, in terms of the options, and I came out with my top five list of backup goaltenders a couple weeks ago here on the show. He was at number five, and the more I think about it, I'd probably move him down the list, number six or seven. Like, I just think if you can find a veteran, that would be the way to go. I just think it makes too much sense.
Or Askarov, just bring him.
Yeah, just bring him up.
Get it going right away.
I did find it interesting the other day that in that press conference, Askarov was brought up, and they basically said he's going to be over there for 2 years, which I don't think is a huge surprise to anybody. But
the press conference with Poile and the
Poile and Kelty, and, yeah, yep.
And also, I think, what was the term? Something was applied to him. It was a big term. Generational player? Maybe not quite that.
Franchise player.
Yeah, franchise player.
Yep.
There you go.
So what does that mean? What does that mean for Saros? Like, is, you know, Adam Vingan came on the show yesterday and pointed out, like, if you're Saros, you're probably wanting a long-term deal at this point. What does a long-term deal mean if you're the Predators? Like, I don't think the Predators are going to want to sign him to a 7 or 8 year contract.
No.
So what do you do? Like, what is a long-term deal for UC Saros? 3 years? 4 years? Where do you cap that number if you're the Predators?
I would assume it would be a 3 or 4 year deal. Have the Preds been to control cost and also to not have no movement clauses? Is the trade-off, has the trade-off been term? Is that fair to say?
I would say that's, yeah, I think so.
Like, term has been sort of like the concession from Poile, right?
Yeah.
So, well, maybe, you know, maybe that needs to change some.
Yeah. Maybe so. Well, the other part, like, if you're Saros, too, it's interesting because he's 1 year away from unrestricted free agency. Like, the timing of this has worked out pretty good for the Predators, in all honesty. Like, you can get him locked up for the next 3 or 4 years now, but if you're him and you want a long-term deal, and you could really stretch this thing out to arbitration, play on a one-year deal, and then next year you're an unrestricted free agent. You can go wherever you want to. Now,
if he plays like this last year, that's great for you.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I don't know what UC Saros is thinking there. My guess would be he wants to play here, and he wants to play here long term. But if the Predators aren't willing to go beyond 2 or 3 years, does that change the way you think if you're UC Saros? I don't know. That's interesting to figure out. I mean, that's obviously of the decisions they have to make, and I would include Granlund in this. That's still, Saros is number one on that list of decisions you've got to make moving forward here.
Yeah, that's a good point. We don't talk about it enough. I hope, based on UC's personality, very, very kind, unassuming type of guy who would take a friendly deal, I hope he has a ruthless agent.
I think he's got the same agent Shea Weber has, which, again, that's kind of an interesting dynamic between the Predators, too.
That is.
Yeah. But, you know, that happens all the time in sports.
Right.
So we'll see what happens on that front. When we come back, we'll be joined by Trey Wallace from Rocky Top Insider. We'll get into the Tennessee Vols with him just a few weeks away now from college football season beginning. And get Trey's thoughts on Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Tennessee Vols and expansion in the SEC as well. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Trey Wallace from Rocky Top Insider. Trey, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
I'm doing great. Really loving the D&B intro. Thank you for that. Appreciate
it. What we're about here on the show. Michelle bringing the hits, making Trey happy before we come on the air here. We like it.
I'm with you, no, Trey.
Nothing like it, boys. How are y'all?
We're doing great, Trey. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. I want to start by getting your thoughts, and we've talked a lot about it here on the show today. Texas and Oklahoma leaving the Big 12. All indications are they're going to be joining the SEC maybe even as soon as next year, next football season. What have you thought of all this? What does this mean for the SEC? What do you think this could mean for Tennessee and the SEC as well, with Texas and Oklahoma coming in?
I think it, you know, when everything kind of went down last week, you know, it took a couple hours to you know, compress it, and then you realize that, you know, Ross Bjork was down there, and there was a reason he was down there. You know, ADs don't travel to media days. You just don't see that. So they, I think they kind of knew that was coming. And then everything that's happened in the last, what, five days that we're leading up here till now, and it seems like everything's kind of fallen in line here. Randy Boyd and Donnie Plowman should be meeting with other SEC presidents and chancellors on Thursday. And if we get Oklahoma and Texas to submit their request to join the conference within the next 2 days, that meeting is going to line up just in time. I think overall, you know, I'm good with like two more teams joining. I would really not like to see, you know, it get up to like the 20 mark or the 24 mark. I think that would be bad for the conference. You're kind of taking away the allure of the Southeastern Conference when you do something like that by bringing in so many teams. But also, I feel like this is a money situation for the conference as well. I think they're going to have to go back in that, you know, that contract that the SEC and ESPN announced, I think it was last summer. They're going to rip that up, and they're going to have to figure out a way, you know, to add these two teams to it and figure out how much more money these schools are going to get. So that's where Tennessee kind of falls in the line here. I think, you know, first looking at it, I think, you know, the Volunteers, okay, they're going to get maybe an extra $16 to $20 million per year from the conference when it comes to TV rights. We're not talking about, you know, bowls or anything along those lines, postseason type stuff. I think right now it doesn't really affect Tennessee in a sense of competition on the field, because Tennessee has their own problems right now trying to get back to that relevant state. But I think when you look at it down the line, it's okay, these are two more opponents, you know, in a sense that Tennessee's going to have to go through. Now, does this mean that, you know, Tennessee can go into Oklahoma now and try to poach a recruit, or can they get into Texas more and try to get after a player? Sure, but where have they, you know, succeeded in that right now to begin with, besides, you know, going in and getting, you know, Caden Salter from this, 2 years ago, getting his commitment from the state of Texas? So from Tennessee side of it, I just think they have to step back and look at it. Okay, y'all are doing your thing. We've got to worry about building up our program first where we can be competitive with you guys. And until that happens, you know, it's just a money grab for the Volunteers right now.
So the SEC fan, Trey, if you could pull the entire SEC football fandom right now, what do you think it would come up with in terms of in favor or not in favor of this move?
Joe, I think it would probably be in favor just because they want to beat Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, it's more or less, you know, do you look at this thing and try to figure out, okay, what can Texas and Oklahoma bring that we already don't have in our conference? But I think, it gives SEC, if you're asking regular SEC fans, maybe travels to a game or travels to watch their team, okay, now we get to go to Austin on the regular. Now we get to go to Norman, Oklahoma on the regular. And, you know, I think that it's going to be able to, I don't know how it helps the conference besides a money situation and a viewership situation, but SEC fans, you know, if they would have added like West Virginia, or if they would have, you know, added somebody else out of the state of Texas, you know, I think you wouldn't have seen, you know, the big picture of, okay, no, we don't want to do this. But now it's just a lot of SEC fans making fun of the Big 12 and saying, okay, we're poaching two more of your members. So I think, you know, they kind of like it. I think it sets up for some interesting battles, especially, you know, Tennessee and Texas, or Tennessee, Oklahoma, or Alabama, Texas. You know, there's so many intriguing things that could come out of this that I think the SEC fans would be down for it.
Trey Wallace from RockyTopInsider.com on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Trey, switching gears to Tennessee on the field, obviously Josh Heupel and company at SEC Media Days last week, and the quarterback, a popular topic of conversation. Obviously, there's a lot of room, or a lot of crowded room in that quarterback room right now, with Joe Milton and Hendon Hooker and Harrison Bailey and Brian Maurer. What do you think of the quarterback competition as it heads in to fall camp here? And who do you think at the end of the day is ultimately going to be under center for Tennessee once the season begins?
Honestly, you know, this thing starts up next Wednesday. I think within the first 2 weeks, you've got to narrow this thing down to two, and then you have to go from there. I think this is going to be a Bailey-Milton battle the last 2 weeks of fall camp, figuring out who the quarterback's going to be. I don't think, you know, this is not a knock on Brian Maurer. I just right now don't feel like he's there with the playbook from talking with some folks to be able to make a run towards that starting position. And Hendon Hooker has a really good arm. He's been able to get a lot of work in with the receivers this summer. You know, his roommate is Valus Jones, and they've been working out, you know, almost every weekend. Can he, you know, do what he's done on the weekends when it comes to passing with his receivers, you know, Walker Merrill, and, you know, you get Bayless and Jalen out there to really make things interesting? We're going to find out. He has experience, and that's the big thing as well, too, that you can't forget about Hendon. You know, I know Harrison has a couple games underneath his belt. So does Joe Milton. But Hendon Hooker, you know, could be the most experienced quarterback, in a sense, on the roster when it comes to game time. So, you know, I think this is something where Bailey has a really good shot at this starting spot, and I think it's something where Milton comes in. Look, everybody talks about his frame, but he's got a really good arm. And a lot of people, I don't think, understand. They want to go back to last year's film, and they want to say, oh, man, you know, look at the passes he didn't complete. Look at the interceptions he threw and how he wasn't getting a lot of zip on the ball after that Indiana game. Well, they don't understand that, you know, Joe Milton tore ligaments in his thumb last year and had surgery immediately after the season, but he didn't really tell his coaches until about 2 weeks after he tore a couple ligaments in that hand. So, you know, I want to see what Joe Milton looks like as he's fully healthy. And if he's the quarterback that you saw, you know, that first game against Minnesota, okay, then I could see him being the starting guy for Tennessee and being able to run an RPO and being able to get the ball down the field. Harrison Bailey's just a different type of quarterback than Joe Milton would be. So it's all about which type of quarterback this Tennessee staff feels like they can win with, and that's why I think they have two totally different options with Bailey and Milton.
If they get it, you know, pick the right guy, and it works out the way it has worked out a lot when Josh Heupel has run an offense and worked with quarterbacks, I think we're going to at least have a lot more aesthetically pleasing Tennessee football this year, Trey. But is it going to be weekly shootouts? What do you think about the defense right now?
That's the rough part, Joe. You know, defensive line depth, okay, they've added a couple pieces, but they had a couple pieces left, which in the end, this is not a knock to the players. I think it was good for the program that they had a little bit of attrition, and they added some. I think Terry can be the type of player that comes in and makes an impact for Tennessee along that defensive line. I think Caleb Tremblay is a depth type of player, but I think he can be a factor as well. But their biggest problem is going to be, you know, what do they do with that linebacker spot? And how do they handle the secondary? It's not like they're just going to be able to flip a switch and this defense is going to go out there and be top six in the conference. They're going to struggle. And the biggest part about this is they're going to struggle in a sense of having the 2 to 3 deep guys, especially when needed, when the offense is off the field every 2 minutes. You know, going kind of getting around to the defensive side. You know, I was talking to Valus Jones Jr., and he talks about, you know, these coaches want to get up to the ball every 5 seconds and run a play. Okay, well, if that's happening, man, your defense is going to be on the field the majority of the game. And it's how much they can withstand against some of these offenses in the Southeastern Conference that's going to intrigue me. So, you know, when I look at this thing, I think the defense is going to have to step up at the linebacker spot along, you know, that Jeremy Banks. How can Juwan Mitchell play? And then you look at, again, that defensive line. Can they get the help they need from a guy like, you know, Latrell Bumpus or Matthew Butler, Elijah Simmons, kid Byron Young or Tyler Barron play well enough coming off the edge to get them off the field? So it's going to be about depth, and it's going to be about how long they're on the field for me.
So, Trey, we've talked a lot about the quarterbacks in this offense, but what about the weapons that they'll be throwing the ball to with Velus Jones Jr., as you brought up, Jalin Hyatt in the mix as well? What do you think of this receiving core for Tennessee? What do you think the upside is for this receiving core for the Vols?
I like it. I really do. You add in, you know, guys like Jimmy Callaway, or you add in Javonte Payton to go along with Velus and Jalin. And even a guy like, you know, like Cedric Tillman, you know, how they're going to be able to use him this year. I think Tennessee's wide receiving core is something that could lead them this year in a sense of, you know, being the veterans on the field. You've got guys out there, and you've got playmakers out there on the edge, and I think that's something they're going to have to use. You know, my biggest thing, too, is, you know, how do you use a guy like Dee Becklin? Do you bring him out of the backfield and you line him up right there at that edge and get him down the field? You know, that's going to be key to me. And even the tight ends, you know, the tight ends too, they're going to be involved in this offense when it comes to passing. So, you know, you look for guys like Princeton Fan or Jacob Warren to take the pressure off the wide receivers where, you know, you've got Velus and you've got Jalin running down the field in wide open spaces. I think that's going to be, you know, key for how Tennessee does with this offense, especially trying to figure out how they're, you know, they're going to run the football, because I think they're talented at that spot. But when you just look at straight up wide receivers, they've got a lot of speed, they've got some height, and I think they can take that to their advantage, especially, you know, the first three games of the season before, you know, conference play starts, and we'll kind of see where it goes from there. I don't know if you'll see a 1,000-yard receiver just because Tennessee has so many weapons on offense this year at that spot, but we'll see. At least the quarterbacks have a lot to deal with on the outside.
So, Trey, as the guy who broke the story on the investigation that ended up costing Jeremy Pruitt his job, how about a prediction right now? We talking, is Heupel being too optimistic when he says basically he thinks it'll be a year of them paying for it and then they'll be able to move forward? Do you think they're just going to impose a postseason ban this year? How do you think this turns out?
Joe, I think they're trying to get this thing done where they don't drop a bomb, you know, middle of the season towards the end and say, hey, you know, we're self-imposing a bowl ban or whatnot. I think you could – Tennessee needs to go at it in a sense of a one-year self-impose, you know, cut your scholarships down to 10, which they could backtrack on and look at this past year and look at the scholarship players that they already have. You're going to see some recruiting restrictions. And a lot of people make – a lot of people want to try to make the argument, Joe, about, oh, man, you know, look what's going on with the NIL. You know, it's kind of the same as what Tennessee was doing. You know, they shouldn't be punished because the NIL is happening. Well, you have to explain to them what Tennessee was allegedly doing had nothing to do with NIL. You know, paying for players' hotel rooms or potentially paying players and recruits and doing this, you know, with bags and underneath the table. None of that has to do with NIL stuff. So I think that mindset from Tennessee fans, I think, kind of need to push that aside. But I also think that the NCAA's power is diminishing so much day by day that if I'm Tennessee, I get this thing wrapped up. We spent $90,000 on their investigation in June. We'll see what that looks like in July. If it comes down a little bit, you know, this thing would be coming in for a landing, you would hope so. So in the end, I'd say one-year bowl ban, yeah, scholarship reductions, recruiting restrictions. Tennessee fired everybody they could that was involved in that investigation in malpractices from the staff. So I think you just have to roll with it. I don't think, you know, does the NCAA come back and say, okay, well, 1 year is not enough, you got to do 2 years. Okay, that's possible. But if that were to happen, that's going to be down the road. And we're not talking about, you know, we're not talking about in the next 6 months. We're talking about in the next, you know, 12, 18 months. So Tennessee's been working alongside the NCAA during this whole investigation and keeping the NCAA abreast of everything that's gone on. And I think it's going to pay off at the end, Joe, when they do the self-impose. And I think the NCAA will agree with them.
Trey Wallace from RockyTopInsider.com has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Covers the Volunteers as well as anyone. Trey, great stuff as always, brother. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
Hey, thank y'all for having me on today. Y'all have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Sounds great. Trey Wallace from Rocky Top Insider, our guest here on Robbie and Rexroad. We'll come back, react to what Trey had to say there, and look ahead to Tennessee's quarterback battle as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in to Nashville Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9. Tonight, the Sounds begin a six-game homestand at First Horizon Park against Columbus, the AAA affiliate of the Cleveland Indians. Pre-game show with Jeff Hem starts at 6:50 and first pitch is at 7:05. Nashville Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9, presented by 312 Pizza Company and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Taking on Columbus tonight with the Sounds is, as we found out yesterday, Darren McFarland, a big fan of the name change of the Cleveland Indians to the Cleveland Guardians. Big fan.
Did he go off?
He didn't go off. I think he's not overly excited about Guardians.
I enjoyed the, they play that old school, like 70s.
Indian Fever song? Oh, yeah.
And Elijah put in
Guardians.
Yeah, it was very, very nice. Very nice work.
See what happens on that front. I don't know that there's a name they could have come up with.
There's no name.
That people would have been like, you know what? Yeah,
there's no, there's no new name that people are going to – I mean, when the Washington Bullets – and, man, I loved watching some Washington Bullets hoops in the 80s with Jeff Ruland and those guys. When they changed to the Wizards, it was just – oh, people were so mad. Who cares?
Worked out okay.
It's fine. Wizards, sure.
See what happens on that.
Again,
front.
Just name
Apparently
your –
Apparently the other option was the Cleveland Spiders. Cleveland Spiders.
I mean, people would be making fun of that right now.
Yeah. Guardians is something.
I mean, Spiders, that at least Spiders, to me, again, name your team after a ferocious type of animal, and, you know, you're good.
Yeah. Spiders would fit that bill.
Or, like, be really creative, like the UC, you know what UC Santa Cruz is, right?
No.
Probably the greatest mascot in sports.
No.
The Banana Slugs.
The Banana Slugs.
The UC Santa Cruz Banana Slugs.
That's pretty awesome.
That is awesome.
I can't believe I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
That's great.
See? Just be creative.
Exactly.
Guardians. You'll be fine, D-Mac. It'll grow on
you. It'll grow on you. 2 years from now, Darren McFarland walking around in a Cleveland Guardians jersey.
You could have, like, well, you could put a picture of your guy, your clone.
Who's my clone?
Well, you said Chris Pratt's going to play you in a movie.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
You know, the Guardians?
Yeah.
See? That's a little tie-in. There, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
That's good.
There we go.
Little Guardians of the Galaxy action. Like it. Well done.
Porus like, huh? What is that?
What's
is that?
That? Is that a movie?
Is that an album?
A motion picture? What's that?
He actually doesn't know. Look.
Thanks to Trey Wallace from Rocky Top Insider for joining us in the last segment. Trey throwing out there that he thinks the quarterback battle is ultimately going to boil down to Joe Milton and Harrison Bailey. So I've always kind of believed that Brian Maurer is a pretty distant fourth in this competition.
Poor Brian Maurer.
I know. But playbook apparently is an issue with him. Could not learn the playbook with Jim Chaney, and now, according to Trey, maybe having some issues with that with Josh Heupel as well.
He's had other roles in the program. So
that is true. So Hendon Hooker, according to Trey, maybe be kind of the outside looking in, and Bailey and Joe Milton, maybe the top two contenders for the quarterback position. What do you think of that? And what do you think of what Trey threw out there about Joe Milton? That obviously the way he plays, the way Harrison Bailey plays, different, but maybe Milton, I think, maybe has a little bit more upside with the arm that he has. Milton's got a big arm. I don't know about Harrison Bailey yet. We'll see on that front. But what do you think of the competition being between those two guys? And if you're Tennessee and Josh Heupel, when do you need to have it narrowed down in your mind?
Well, I agree with Trey. You got to be at least splitting it between two guys pretty quickly. And then, you know, there's probably movement from that. But I'm just not as bullish on Milton. I understand the thumb thing. But it wasn't just like a guy out there struggling because of an injury. I mean, he was still out there able to perform. I mean, he was not making good decisions consistently for Michigan. Their offense was abysmal. And you can blame, just like here at Tennessee, it's not all on Garantano. There's a lot of blame to go around with the coaches. So I think that's fair to look at Michigan and say that, but I just, from what I saw, taking that into account, I don't feel like he comes in and it's like, oh, everybody, get out of the way. Here's your quarterback. He is starting from behind, as Trey said. I mean, Hooker, I mean, came in with a strong idea that he would be the starter, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, this is why you make this move if you're him. And you knew that Bailey and Maurer are there. So you're probably not thrilled that Milton's coming in to join this mix. But the fact that he works with the receivers and things like that, I think it's one of those three guys. I guess if I had to make a prediction right now, I guess I'd go Milton, but I don't feel like it's a slam dunk.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Philip and Franklin texting in. Maybe I heard Trey wrong, but if all UT is going to get is a year of self-imposed postseason ban and a year of losing a handful of scholarships, then my team better start paying recruits in McDonald's bags. It's completely worth it.
Who's your team?
I don't know.
The McDonald's bag thing is not true, by the way.
But it didn't happen.
Narduzzi, by the way. Pat Narduzzi, Pitt coach, made a McDonald's bag joke at ACC Media Day. It'll never die. It'll never die, but it's not true.
I'm okay with it not dying, though. That's fine.
Well, first of all, anybody reacting to this and what the punishment is, have you seen all the details? Because I haven't. I've heard a lot of things.
I've not seen
all the details. But a lot of things you hear don't necessarily end up in the report. So let's wait and see exactly what all went down. And I think Trey's dead on. A lot of people are like, oh, now why don't we? But the bottom line is, whatever the rules were when you did stuff, that's how you have to be judged. But I do think that moving forward, it's going to be a hard sell for anyone to get, serious. And first of all, a lot of these things are just now going to be, to me, I mean, that's one reason that why it should be completely deregulated and wide open. Then you just eliminate all this crap. Great. Some middle-aged businessman gave a kid a few hundred bucks because he's awesome at football. Okay. But I have to think that that's still in the back of the mind. It's like we talk about the Hall of Fame, right? Ooh, somewhere in the back of your mind, you know that guy played for the Cowboys. Yeah, maybe that's true. Maybe that has an impact on a voter, maybe not. But if you're the infractions committee right now, you really going to bring the hammer on anybody? Especially if, as Trey said there, Tennessee's done everything you're supposed to do in terms of working with them. Imagine Tennessee coming out saying, okay, we're going to take away the postseason. We'll have fewer recruiting restrictions with some of the coaches. A couple coaches can't go out, a few scholarships. And the NCAA say, no, 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 my friend. Here comes the hammer. And you're in the same and Will Wade just carries on.
Just keeps going.
It doesn't add up.
By the way, the man has entered the building in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Aaron Rodgers is in the facility at Lambeau Field. Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network capturing the video, Rodgers walking in, man bun and all, into the building.
It's right behind you on the screen. He arrived at 9:31 Eastern time.
Wow, very precise.
Exciting.
The timing. Yes. Does that mean he's a minute late, or is he really early?
That's a good question. Does it matter? Doesn't matter anymore.
Nope. Aaron Rodgers back in there, buddy.
It's like senior year. It's like senior year of high school for Rodgers.
Just do whatever he wants.
Yeah, senior skip day.
Entering his 17th season as the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers. Brett Favre only got 16. Bart Starr only got 16. So no Packers quarterback ever got to 17. Now Aaron Rodgers has.
And Bart Starr, 2 Super Bowl rings.
Yep.
Brett Favre, 1.
Aaron Rodgers, 1. Going for 2 here.
Maybe going for 2 this year.
See what happens on that front. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on college athletics, get back into what the future of the SEC could look like with Texas and Oklahoma coming into the fold, all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.